Hey everyone, I'm excited to introduce to you Tai An, and it's pronounced Huang, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Tai An Huang.
Yeah, so we know each other from the Orphans Future Alliance. She's one of the co-founders along with her sister. And yeah, I'm really excited. I know we're gonna have a conversation about mentorship, entrepreneurship. I also hear a lot of just going after your dreams and just being unstoppable and not being a victim to rejection and just I know mentorship is a big part of how you've been very successful, and excited to share a little bit more about your journey and why you started your own company.
Thanks. Thank you for having me. Yes, mentorship is kind of weave into the thread of what we do, particularly at Amoeba, but as you know, at Orphans Futures Alliance as well.
Yes, and I know you have a pretty entrepreneurial path. You have a history of leading international teams for Fortune 500 companies, implementing data analytics software for CPG companies, and you know, with the Orphans Future Alliance, you're helping. It's a nonprofit dedicated to lifting orphans out of poverty through scholarship and activity-based mentoring. And you've also been named 40 Under 40 by Boston Business Journal, and
just
you've been
turning
featured...
that 40.
yeah, and also you've been on Wall Street Journal, Parents, Boston Globe, Today, Total Beauty, Business Insider. So yeah, just really excited to be with you and be able to share your journey with others.
Thanks for having me. I'm actually really excited because I know you've been doing your podcast and you have really amazing speakers on. So I'm just adding myself to that list.
Yeah, a lot of Asian executives. We've had like VP, who's also Vietnamese, a VP at Verizon. We've had, Julie Tran, who connected us, who's up to really cool things. And yeah, it's just been cool to be able to use this. A lot of the listeners are much younger in their career, so for them it's nice to be able to have access to Asian mentors who are much further along, so that they can either reach out to you if there's something that piques their interest, and whether it's pursuing an entrepreneurial journey or just to be able to have access to people that they normally don't have access to with whatever current existing networks they have at this moment.
Yeah, and I think I love that. I love the fact that now there's just more representative of Asian in, you know, a lot of it is in actually in skincare. It's skincare predominantly. I love it that I see a lot of Asian in the, I call it the executive seat, like really breaking the barrier. For example, Patty Wu, who came from Honest Company, is now leading the charge at Bye Bye Baby merchandising. So we actually had a chat about this where we're like, yes, there are finally women brands or like retailers that are like, we're not the back office anymore. We're actually the front and center making those executive decisions. And you're starting to see more and more of women, particularly Asian women and men too, but in my space it's mostly women who are doing that.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah, there's a lot more representation, especially in the beauty area and CPG. I mean, obviously there's always room for growth, right? But you do see some of even people that have made their start from being YouTubers, right? And now they're leveraging that to create a brand, and Vietnamese people too, right? I think it's cool to see
it's Michelle Phan from the YouTube, and she's back on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
And there's some really amazing brand. I mean, I think Tour Shy of like very successful exit for Tatcha as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just to name a few really amazing entrepreneurs who have really made it.
Yeah, I know when I listened to that, how I built this episode.
It was the craziest thing ever.
Yeah, she really killed it, right? And like you said, you know, people are like, oh, there's not a market for Asians, and clearly she dispelled that myth, really well. Yeah. So,
but what I love is that she really says how it is. It wasn't this like cookie cutter fluff that you see in any other place. She really laid it down, and I was like, wow, blunt about it, and I appreciate that as when I listened to it around, you know, a few years ago when I was just starting out, and I'm like, okay, you know, you really gotta like get your head into the space where it's going to be really, really tough, but you gotta get over it, and then you just gotta move on, and then you gotta have to understand that this is for the long game, and you cannot quit along the way. And what she saw was some serious entrepreneur spirit from the beginning.
Like you said, it's certainly a commitment, right? And nothing ever happens overnight, right? People only see from the outside and they're like, oh man, must be nice to be rich, right? But they don't really see the thousands of hours and all the rejection and all how many venture capital, how many private equity, how many investors you approached before even getting your first investor, right?
Yeah, I remember the one thing that resonated with me was she's like, you know, in all these magazines, she's like how they all made it sound like she didn't pay herself, blah, blah. But she's like, on how I built it, she's like, I couldn't pay myself. That was a different story. I had like no choice not to pay myself. But let's be honest, she also had a husband that was able to support both of them. And a lot of time, what you saw was like, being able, a lot of the entrepreneurs were able to do it on one income, and including myself. Like, I'm lucky enough that we're still able to do it under one income, because when the time when you think you have to pay yourself, you're like, actually, I need to pay somebody else first to move the company along. So you like make those executive decisions on for the good of the company more so than anything else. But you won't make that decision if you were the breadwinner. And I think that's what she was getting at, is like she didn't have a choice, but it didn't affect her finances at home too much.
And it sounds like just being on the same page with your partner, for any entrepreneur is always good, right?
My
'Cause like you
goodness.
said, that's half the battle, right?
Well, it's actually make or break it for your relationships. And I don't think people realize this. You have no idea how many founders I've talked to who, through this experience, they really learned about themselves and the growth. But at the same time, they start to realize their path with their partners have really separated, like a different direction of each other. So it's like trying to build a house like together. I wouldn't recommend it. I've gone through it. But you really have, because you're going to be dedicating like 24/7. And even your partner's either going to be very supportive of you and in this ride, or they're going to either be like, you're crazy. They're going to ask you to quit because the stress is on them to be the breadwinner. Or they, when you start to do what consider as meteoric rise, they might start to feel inferior because then you're the famous one and all these things. But it's all fluff at the end of the day. But if you are in it together, like we are a team, this is not about you, this is the family, and this is our future together. And it's like a team mentality. And they don't mind being the support in the background, then it will work out. But yeah, entrepreneurship is not the faint of heart, especially starting your own company.
I do think some people think that you do have to quit everything and start and kind of like burn the boats, as they say. But I do hear some people say actually it's smarter to do it on the side until it gets to a point where you can do that, right? What are your thoughts on which path?
I mean, there's no right or wrong way to do this, and I think both paths are fine. I think it's what's your goal and how fast you want to grow. Because I think that if you are doing it as a co-founding team, yeah, I think you should stay. I mean, if you don't have the luxury to just go all in, don't do it. Just keep your job, you know, pay the bills and do this until you think you're ready to scale. But for me, it was just, I was all in. I was like, I'm gonna do it. But I also had the ability to do it because I wasn't the breadwinner. We could scale down and we'll be okay. So it's just depending on how much risk you're willing to take. If you're not a risk averse, it's not a bad idea to, and you're not quite sure if your ideas are gonna take off, then don't, like, keep that job and do a second. And I know some entrepreneurs have a brand and a company, but they still have a day job anyway. It's just like an alternate source of income for them, versus what I'm trying to build is like a really disruptive company in this category and producing the most innovative, sensitive skincare products out there really carving a path, and to carve that type of path, you really have to be all in.
Yeah, and I'm sure your investors ask that too, right? Like, are you all in, or are you doing, like, how committed are you as well?
So I would say that investor won't fund you if you're not full time. If you're co-founding together, one of you must be full time, because that's how dedicated you are.
Right.
Plus, it's like their money. They don't want to be someone who's, when you're not full time, then they don't think you're dedicated enough to the business.
Right.
And like, what they're looking for is X strategy, X time and growth. If you're only part time doing this, then they're like, well, it's going to take like 10 years before they take off. Hmm. So from them, for investor, they invest in you, but ultimately they invest to get a return that's better than, you know, the savings account or the stock market, etc.
I'm curious, what it sounds like you saw a need of a more natural, more healthier alternative. So clearly there's a market there, and folks that want to be more mindful about what they're putting on their kids' body, right? How were you able to identify that market? And because I'm sure there's still many players out there, right?
Oh, this is like the most crowded market you could think of. Like, building a skincare company is not that hard to do. And there's a ton of thousands and thousands of them, and most of them will fail every year. And I think what really sets us apart is we don't say that we're a natural company, organic company, none of that. It's actually, we're a sensitive skincare company that really innovates in a way of de-stressing someone's life through our innovative packaging, application, and uses. So our product is steeped in tradition of natural remedies and ingredients, but the delivery system of what we do is just completely different, which is why we can stand out on the shelf itself. And I think when you need to understand how can you carve a path, how can you disrupt, like, you don't even need to disrupt a category, to be honest. How can you carve a path within such a crowded space, and where you have product market fit and what consumer ultimately want? If you can directionally get there, then you should start a company and think. For us, it was a passion because I grew up with really sensitive skin, lots of eczema problem. My children has it. It was really down to that inspiration, a moment of like, it's really an aha moment. And then when you take that aha moment, which everyone gets, be able, you know, you go there and you're like, I could totally do that. And a few years later, you're like, someone actually did it, you know? that type. So it goes from theoretical and then comes to execution. Like, can you execute? That really what sets apart people who are true entrepreneurs or not is like their ability to execute their plan.
That's a good point. I do think 95% of people have all these ideas, but very few people are willing to actually do something about it. A lot of people are like, oh yeah, I have this idea. And then when push comes to shove, they're like, yeah, but you know, I don't want to. And then they're like, oh, someone stole my idea. It's like, yeah, anyone can come up with the idea, but how can you actually create a brand? How do you create a company? That's the harder part.
I think everyone always have ideas, and nobody ever has like the most inventive idea, honestly. It's just that, are you the first to do it, or are you the fastest to do it, and how well can you execute it? I remember, like, throughout my 20s and things, I've always had to, like, I remember trying to start a couponing app. And then I went through the entire exercise. I kind of mapped it out. But then I realized technology wasn't there when I was attempting to do this. And I was not a tech person to begin with. And it was just too complicated. And everyone told me, like, oh, you couldn't do it. Now there's like a gazillion couponing sites that you can use, mobile app, delivery system, all that stuff. But it's really like finding the business at the right time, like starting the business at the right time with the right things is really important as well.
Timing is key, right? Because I always hear people say sometimes being the first is not good too. If it's too premature, there's not the right infrastructure is in place, or there's just, then, you know, sometimes like you might be wasting your time because the market's not ready for that product yet.
Yeah, it is completely true. And being the first is not always the greatest because it's like takes enormous amount of educating the consumers and why you're there. I mean, for us, I mean, we're constantly trying to educate a consumer why our product is far superior than anything else out there. And they still can't wrap their head around a natural product being so effective. And that you could use it in such a way, but once they do use it, then it's like that aha moment comes out. But getting them from point A to point B is really difficult and expensive to do in a very crowded space. And those are things you think about, but it really comes down to execution and having a right team, right product, and right fit, consumer fit, and product fit in place.
It seems like you're really good at the marketing and also leveraging your networks. Like, it seems like you understand that to do this, you're going to have to be creative in terms of the different many channels to promote and to be able to have conversations with different brands, different retailers, different procurement folks. Like, how do you think about, like, strategically, like, who to reach out with? I think a lot of people probably are paralyzed and they're like, I don't even know where to start, you know?
Well, I'm not from the industry, so a lot of it is having to build a roadmap for myself. And I think this is where I utilize LinkedIn very, very well, is that I don't think people really tapped into the true potential of what you can do at using LinkedIn connections. So I had this entire strategy. I was going to build my portfolio. I was going to build my network of insiders myself. And a lot of time, what I did was I would sit in on either virtual conferences, webinars, and things, and I would physically reach out to everybody on that I've met. Whether I'm not, there's no shame in it. Just, have an authentic introduction. Don't spam them. Really get to know them, and you'll be surprised. People will say yes, connect with you, and they would actually do a follow-up with you. And I think some of the earliest follow-up that I received was from, like, let's say CEO Bigelow, Chairman Ian Ginsberg was like, yes, I'll have a call with you. I'm like, oh wow, okay. It was like, so even surprising me. And then from there, I really learned a lot from him within just an hour conversation with him, and then some of the other folks as well. And I think this is where it's really important. And then from there, I think being connected to some of these key players really provide you with the credibility of who you are, and then more and more people would like accept your connections. And now, you get to the point where you start to decline connection, which is interesting too, because you're always like, oh my gosh, and I never get phased out about who I'm able to connect to, but you have to have that honest connections, and then it just kind of snowballed from there. Your network just grow larger and larger. And I think one of the things folks don't do well, and actually everyone can really practice this, is growing your connection and paving that way. So now my network is so robust where I can just email, text, like message someone on LinkedIn, and be able to have a conversation, or like in these like Facebook groups for entrepreneurs, founders, and things, and have and you have to find the right one too, because some of them are quite competitive. So you got to find the right fit. But that's really important, is to build your network. And a lot of time, some of the inbounds that we receive actually comes from communication and like me telling the story of Abiba on LinkedIn and like sharing all the wins that we have so far. So like posting strategically can get you really far. I think that's like Walmart saw a posting and stuff and reached out to us, which, yeah, that was really interesting. And some of the others that, like, I think Giant Eagle saw an ad of ours and then connected us, asked us regarding our products. So you get inbound, you'll just be very surprised who actually inbound you.
Gotcha. So you really leverage media in a way that gets you exposure, and then because of that exposure, naturally, you do a little bit less work because there's always going to be buyers or certain channels that are always looking for the next company to purchase or to partner with. So you really leverage really well, it sounds like.
You just really need to understand what strat how you're gonna you use every all your every piece of your toolkits to really get to point B, which is strategize about not only raising your profile, building your credibility as an entrepreneur, particularly entrepreneur not in this space. There's a ton of entrepreneur in this space, but to be outside of the space and like diving in, it's really difficult for someone. So you really have to build that, build bulk up your resume, I call it like that, and build that credibility because you have to build credibility with industry and as well as with then the consumer will trust you.
And it also sounds like you really know how to leverage the networks in Boston and your alma mater, and that also gives you access to other super connectors as well, it sounds like, right?
Yes, I think all the schools now have some sort of incubators and like startup scenes. So I highly recommend that folks go and talk to the alma mater. First of all, you just don't know who your alumni are. And second, it's a great way if they have an incubator program that you can go through. It's safe. They can tap you, they can connect you with the mentors, but also you get all these things that an accelerator outside would pitch for you, but you don't actually have to like first pay for it and second give up equity. It's a really great way to know whether you have what it takes or not, and it, whether you're serious or not about it before you really take the next step.
Yeah, and it sounds like you're also pretty generous in terms of like equity, 'cause you really want your folks to be invested and be committed to the business, right? So they're willing to really go the extra mile because you also want to make them a big part of the company as well.
Yeah, building a culture, one of the things we're doing is we're building a brand, but we also really are employee focused company. So yes, so having a compensation package that's just really focused on what the employees really want instead. So I always joke that we're not the smoothie company. We don't give out free dinners and smoothies, but we give you like, but we're working on giving you things that you actually wish you have, what I wish I had, like some of the things that we are working to implement is like if you work with us for 3 years and you're a high performer, we will pay you a month to go take a sabbatical. So things like that is on our wish list to put together. Like parents, they just need help. So like babysitting services paid by the company makes more sense because then it's like less pressure on them, flexibility at work. There's no need to apologize if you can't, make a meeting. I think those being really about being more empathetic to modern day families and parents and maybe just youth. Like you don't have to be parents. It's just a lot of us are in like at the company. Being under putting yourself in your employee shoes, your team shoes. I don't like to say employees, just your team shoes, and understand giving them what and like building this out like what you want for them at the end of the day goes a long way because you're thinking about your employee people as people and not just another number, another cost, and what the culture of the company should be. So I've said multiple times to pretty much I said this to everybody who I interview for the position at the company was that what we're trying to build is a company where people can thrive at work and at home. So what does that really mean is how do you thrive? Do you need to be, working remotely in some amazing exotic location? Sure, we can accommodate that. Do you need to be face like in person? Okay, we can work on that. Would you like to be part-time, full-times, like kind of work so you get the best out of people when you can figure out how to meet each other halfway. Ultimately, we're like a not-for-profit company, so obviously we got to make our numbers and hit profitability, et cetera. But I think there's a healthy balance we can get to.
Yes, it sounds like you're really adaptive to this new world, right? Because at the end of the day, people want flexibility, like you said, especially parents in the past, they got the short end of the stick, right? So it sounds like your company sees that, hey, the reality is like you don't have to sacrifice being an awesome parent. Like you can be both. You could be committed and be super productive during the times that you are working, and you can also be there for your kids and not have to sacrifice one or the other.
Absolutely. And we highly encourage you to, coach the football team or be there for this child production play. We don't need you to be, if you can't make it, just say you can't make it and then move on and we can accommodate. Like, for example, my marketing director just had a baby several months, I think several months ago. And we understand she has, her schedule's a little crazy. So I will work my schedule on hers if I need to. But at the same time, or do we don't really need meetings. You can just Slack channel me most of the time. And like most of the time, like I cannot take morning. That's actually a rule. I do not take morning calls unless it's absolutely emergency. And the biggest problem, the reason is I have to do this crazy, like, I'm like an Uber driver for my own family. I gotta like pick up the kids at a prepay, drop them off, and then like it's a 2 hour trip thing going on in the morning. So there's no way unless it's absolute emergency. So the team knows that. So you just, but I think I have to set that tone at work for people to be comfortable to do the same. And I expect them to do that. So I think it's like tone from the top and being just constantly being mindful of that to balance it out and to demonstrate.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? I think most companies, even companies that have more flexibility, if the leadership team isn't doing it, then everyone's like, is this, can I even, leave early to go to my kid's game or something like that, right? It's funny because, a lot of companies have all these benefits, like you said, like free smoothies or whatever, but at the end of the day, like paying for a babysitter is much more valuable than getting free smoothies, right? So
Exactly. Or like if you have, elderly care and things. So we're like really thinking about what is it ultimately going to make our employees thrive at work, but it really starts at home. So how can we help them in order for them to for us to even actually get better retention, maximum return and loyalty? That doesn't mean that we expect you to stay with us for the rest of your life as well, but we want to be a very healthy relationship, and we hope that you stay with us for a very long time. I worked with so many companies, toxic ones, really fun ones. And I just see, like what I would have wanted if like and wished I did. I think a lot of time employees leave because they're not happy. And so, and we can never satisfy an employee all the time, but I think you just need to be mindful of what it is. And I think starting your own company and culture allows me to do that.
That's awesome. Yeah, you took the best of what you. It sounds like you're good at identifying like gaps, and then that helps you create like not only the product, right? Because you saw a gap in terms of the eczema, and there's such a huge market for that, and then vice versa. You saw what didn't work with some employees, and then you're able to implement that. And yeah, I mean, that's essentially if you're solving any problems, right? You're going to be successful because you see that there's a need for this in the market and in the world, right? As an employee. As a parent, it sounds like you're pretty good at like problem solving in general.
I'm an operational person. So problem solving is what I do. But I think anyone can just like, I think just observation really. Observe and like really think about if you were in that shoes, like what do you want out of a company? And I think as long as you're able to articulate that, and I think everyone wants really the same thing and able to like apply that. I think you have to like you really gotta walk the walk is what it is for your company in order to really. And luckily, because I think a lot, actually, to take a step back, I think a lot of the new founders and CEOs, particularly women founders and CEOs in the space that I am in, take it very seriously about what kind of company they are building. I know another one, Bobby, is like some crazy, don't quote me, but I thought it was like 6 months maternity leave for like a startup. And some of the other ones, like free infant formula. I mean, they're an infant formula company, so of course they're gonna be free infant formula, but things like that really make sense for them.
And I'm curious, it sounds like your mother has had like a pretty big impact in more of the entrepreneur and like giving back and being a value add to society. I'd love for you to share like what you learned from her. It sounds like she was a big part of the inspiration in your entrepreneurial mindset.
Absolutely. People, I think she is the number one inspiration for me, coming from really bootstrapping it after Vietnam War and really being the entrepreneur, coming from never having to work a day in her life and then kind of figuring out how, and then coming over here in the US in the 90s and like starting all over again as thing, and then just, become like a salon owners and like really like helped the entire family for as they immigrated over. The hard work, the you must do it, there's no such thing as a no. All those things really I've observed when I was young, and it's just part of my character and what I like took away with. So I have this very, I call it steely resolve of there's never a no. I'm just gonna like there's always a way around it, and you just gotta figure out what it is. But luckily, you don't have to do it alone if you build a really strong team. And you got to re rely on your team to do
I love what you said. I do think I'm not maybe because of the war in Vietnam, but I do think Vietnamese people in general are pretty inherently resilient, right?
Yeah.
Like similarly, I'm typically someone who will hustle a lot more than maybe some folks that maybe have gone through as much adversity and what our parents went through coming from here from Vietnam. So, and I love what you said about teamwork, right? It's like we could be simply brilliant, but if we are not good at empowering our teams, then it doesn't really matter, right? You can't really do it alone.
Yeah. And I would say like a really good example is like we have this happen twice to us at this point. But one day suddenly our listing on Amazon went down and we have no idea why. No idea. We're like, oh my God. And you could freak out because you're losing thousands of dollars every minute, pretty much. And instead of just like helicoptering and then saying, what the F guy, all these things, I was like, okay, the teams can handle this. And they did. I actually monitored the chat and everything, but I didn't like helicopter in to do that because it was just that stress for no problem, no reason. You know what I mean? Like, you don't need that. Like, we know there's a problem. You don't need me to tell you there's a problem as long as you're already working on it and trying to solve it and triaging it. And you don't need me to step in. So, why would I step in? So, I think that's like, as entrepreneurs and as like a very type A person, your first inclination is to just, I can handle it. I'm gonna be the one solving the problem. And it's like you gotta like the mindset has to shift where you're like, you built a team that could handle problems. You shouldn't have to be the one always handling the problem. What you need to do is make sure that you clear the path for them to solve the problem.
Yeah, like you said, by leading by example, they also see, they learn from you, I'm sure, right? And then culturally, you're very clear in like what you want, and then you also empower people and trust that your team can handle it, right? So you're not you don't have to work like 100 hours, right? Because you know that you can rely on your team to get the job done as well.
And then when they can't, then that's when you step in and make an email. It's a write an email and to someone you know at Amazon, very high up, and going, I kind of need the help. Could you just send me someone on your team who can resolve this? And lo and behold, an hour later, they can fix it. So it's like you step in because you have, but that's the network you built. You have to build these network out and to leverage these contacts when you need help and things like that. But you don't always have to pull the trigger unless it's absolutely necessary.
And it
So
sounds like,
that's why your value comes in. It's that it's that ability to clear some of these roadblock that they might not be able to solve themselves.
And it sounds like you're good at being resourceful, clearly, but like I think some people are afraid to ask for help or afraid to put themselves out there for fear of like maybe someone will say no. What would you say to folks that are like afraid of rejection?
Oh, go through fundraising and then you won't be afraid of rejection. You'll get
Touché.
so many no's. I remember what Jeff Bezos said, like he has like 40 no's before 20 people said yes to his idea, and now they own like what 20% of the company. I wish I was those 20 people who gave him like $50,000 each. You know, I imagine. But that is what it is. You can't, you have to shed the fear because you're gonna get nosed. I mean, we get nosed all the time about when we go into front of like boutiques and things like, you want to carry our product? No, no. Like, once you are able to get past the fact that it's not gonna be on you, it's just it happens to be a game, a number of game, like there's a number of game where there's a lot of nos for this, yes, and then there will be yes, and then a ton of nos again. And like, but what you get out is it's like, what are you learning from those no's? And I think you just have to have a steely resolve to get past it. If you can't do that, it's going to be very stressful for you to be an entrepreneur because then you take it too personal. It's going to affect your mental health. Like a lot of like, so I mean, we have teams who are on sales and they're like, and what we learn is that they might not be very good at these sales things because they take it personally. And I'm like, you can't if you're not a salesperson. You will get no's all the time. So yeah.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on, because I do think in Asian culture there's a lot about like face, you're saving face,
Yeah.
right? And like, you know, and with that comes like you don't want to put yourself out there unless it's like in a positive light. So, do you feel that that's one of the obstacles that Asians go through while being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. There are some really famous groups, I'm not gonna name name, who is very good at showing faces versus challenges and asking for help and collaboration. I think Asians tend not to do that because they're trying to save face. It's inherent in our culture to save face and to look appear strong in things. But I think we could all, you know, grow together and actually really tap into the potential of all of us if we just kind of go out there and say, can you help me? I would love to partner or something and actually accept the help or actually extend the help. You have no matter how, and it's always, it's so interesting to me because we are always pushing for like helping and lifting each other up. But in practice, I actually struggle to see that. And I'm hoping I can change that because I'm always available for that stuff. But I think if we can just change mentality between ultimate competition to actually supporting each other, we would do a lot better.
Yeah, that's a good message, right? You know, we've come a long way as a collective, right? Asian entrepreneurs. And yeah, there's still so much more, you know, actually collaboration, actually beyond the surface, beyond the superficial, like, yeah, I'll help you, right? And yeah, I mean, clearly people like you are changing that, right? Are paving a way where more collaboration, more you know, authentic. So it's not just like the good stuff too, right? Like these are some of the roadblocks, these are some of the challenges that I've faced, like just letting you know so you can anticipate them ahead of time.
Yeah, and then some of this was like a really good example is that I reached out to another founder who's in a national retailer, and I was like, can you introduce me? We're not competitor with each other. We're actually complementary products. And there was like a no, I can't help you. I was like, okay, that was not what I expected. Because you've gone through it, you know, the rejection, you expect them to like at least help you some way, like either just do the first introduction, right? I talked to another founder and it's a hit or miss. I talked to another founder and she was like, sure, no problem. And she sent a message directly to the head buyer at this national retailer and we got a meeting and we're going to be going to national retail. But it's like that. It's like all you have to do is like the small assistant to get to smaller brands that are just starting out that can make a huge difference. And then it's just a matter of giving back. But that's mentality has to, but you go both ways. But so now like I'm gonna help that person, you know, get into make that connection with another retailers that I'm actually working in that she does she didn't even have the you know had a chance to be introduced to them and make that connection and have some vouch. But I think we have to be like that in order to not to really succeed. And that's a shame for me that I want us to all like to just to be just like walk the walk a little bit more.
Yeah, it does seem like the karmic energy that you put out in the universe by you connecting others and just doing the right thing, it seems like it does come back to you, right? Like, because you are doing good in the world, the universe tends to reward those who are putting out good energy, right? Whether it's through Orphans Future Alliance or whatever you do to help younger entrepreneurs that are, seeking a similar path as you. But yeah, well, thank you so much. All of this has been really insightful. There are a lot of young folks that are always curious about pursuing an entrepreneurial path, and I'll connect your social media, your website.
Yep.
But yeah, I really want to acknowledge you for just, doing like, well, creating a company that is innovative, that really cares about their employees. Like you really care about your team. The mentorship, the network that you build, and just the good that you're doing in the world. I have no doubt that you'll continue to grow and expand to many retailers and continue to grow the e-commerce as well. It sounds like you have the right people, the right vision, and yeah, excited to see what you continue to build.
Thank you. And it's they can always reach out to me in LinkedIn as well. I'm always happy to help and if I can. And I think the biggest thing is just start. Don't be waylaid by fear of failure and things. And that what's I think what was it? Oh gosh, well, now I can't remember his name, but he Elon Musk said that what makes a person successful, a successful founder and like extraordinary and the regular folks is their ability to execute dream, but also execute and then fail and execute again. It's just you got to do it multiple times. Not gonna be the first time you d done it. And in fact, actually, just the last thing is like, and Biba is not my first time being an entrepreneur. Don't forget, I actually built Orphans 8 years before this and went through a ton of lessons and trials and errors and lots of trials and beforehand. So I had a bit of more experience coming and taking that nonprofit to the for-profit side. So it does help. It's like, so like how well we're doing now is really predicated on the fact that this is my second time. So I think people have to keep that in mind that it's not like the first time you're doing something, it's just the first time you experience it in a different space itself. But at least you tried it first.
Yeah, I hear that, there's going through the trials and tribulations of starting a nonprofit. It's not easy, especially in other countries, right? And then
Yes.
empowering a team, not only with the time zones, but for a nonprofit, right? Ultimately, people aren't getting paid, right? So if you can motivate folks who aren't getting paid, then it's certainly good practice for co your company for a
Yes.
for-profit.
Nothing motivates, nothing will get you better practice than trying to motivate people to spend hours of their life doing nonprofit work. But yeah, including you, Dave. Listen, all right. So thank you so much for having me. I hope that the listeners got a few takeaways out of it, and always feel free to reach out to me if they need anything.
Yes, I'll include your contact information, your LinkedIn. Sounds like you're active on LinkedIn. And
A lot.
yeah, thank you so much. Orpha has helped me really have a giving mindset and has helped me be able to get over the fear of rejection as I continue to fundraise. So that has certainly helped me, like you said, in all aspects of life because I'm less scared of rejection, even though, yes, it still hurts like sometimes, but every day it gets a little bit less. I don't, like you said, I don't make it personal as much.
Yeah, well, I'm loving what I'm seeing, and I see like the growth. Actually, when I first met you to now, I just see a tremendous personal growth. And I hope that it was because, some of like what you saw, what we did at Orpha and like the giving back, as I mentioned, and just being inspired. And I hope that it inspired, I hope that inspired you to like inspire others of what you're doing now.
Yeah, I think so. You're right, right? A lot of these skills that, being of service, adding value, connecting people together and not being afraid to put yourself out there, yeah, has certainly helped me, like you said, try to add value to the Asian community, whether it's like younger folks who are still in college or young professionals who are seeking that passion or potentially seeking to build whatever vision and whatever business they're trying to do to help make the world a better place. So yeah, I definitely see the parallels and the correlation. So thank you for that.
Thank you. And then I think it's pretty late now, so because you were like your window behind you is like went from like white to completely dark now. So have a good weekend then. It is the
Thank you.
weekend, so
You too.
get a drink. All right, take care.